Hello and welcome to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. My name is Karen Morton and shortly I'll be joined by Paul Couchman, the Regency cook who's co-presenter on the programme. If you are listening to us on FM, you'll be possibly out driving around in your car. You can also listen to us on DAB if you're further afield, or indeed you can shout Alexa, Radio Reverb, the Food and Drink Show, and you will get us that way. And of course, you can listen online. If you would like to get in touch with us here on the Food and Drink Show, you can find us on social media at Tasty Radio Brighton and also by contacting www.radioreverb.com. And of course, you can email us there. We always love to hear from you. It's always a delight to know what you're cooking in your kitchen. And indeed, if you are a food producer, if you're a restaurant, a cafe, or you've some interesting story relating to food, then how would you like to be a guest on the show? Then please do get in touch. The Food and Drink Show is sponsored by Brighton Gin, the most delicious gin, which comes in pavilion strength and seaside strength. And this month's cocktail, brought to you by Brighton Gin, is the Bletchley 8000 and the Brighton Gin Twist to it. In celebration of what was International Women's Day on March the 8th, Brighton Gin thought it would be great to come up with a cocktail to commemorate the 8,000 amazing women who worked at Bletchley Park, which was the central codebreaker unit in Britain during the Second World War. So here's the little twist to the cocktail if you've got a pen and paper ready. What you will need is 50 ml of Brighton Gin Seaside Strength, 25 ml of fresh lime juice, 15 ml of fresh orange juice, 10 ml of sugar syrup, and 6 mint leaves. Then you shake it all together with some ice, and there you have it, the Bletchley 8000. If you want a longer drink, then you can add some tonic water or soda water, or maybe even a little Prosecco, and mix it up again in your own way. Now, don't forget that if you would like to know more about this particular cocktail or other cocktails using Brighton Gin, then please go along to www.brightongin.com. And I have to say that I have given that cocktail a little turn and it really is delicious. Well, today on the show, we are celebrating all things chocolate. And the wonderful thing is that it is readily available. It is affordable. And you would think it's quite simple, but it is actually a very complex thing, the making of good chocolate. Going back thousands and thousands of years, the wonderful cocoa plants growing in really humidity, that would be something we wouldn't be able to do here in Britain. But of course, it came originally from South America, made its way to other parts of the globe, to including Africa. And today we're going to be talking to local chocolate producer, George Willicombe from the Brighton Cocoa Company. And it is a delightful story about how he got into chocolate and the sort of chocolate that he is sourcing ethically and what he is doing to mix it up with his culinary skills in his very special shop on Portland Road. So let's go and meet George. And one of the things I wanted to ask him, first of all, really was, you know, what is it about chocolate that we all love so much?
It's a hard one because there's such a variety of chocolate. It's sort of similar to wine, really. You've got so many different flavours, and each chocolate bar is quite unique, but it's just a small treat, I feel. You know, it's that thing that gets you through the day.
Oh, a small treat, that thing that gets you through the day. I remember, George, my son, when he was only a little, now he was able to have solids at this time, but, you know, in a high chair, when my mum broke him off a little bit of chocolate button and put it in his mouth, and his little legs and his arms, his whole body was wriggling with sheer delight. No other food had that effect. And I think we're all the same. Now, there may be some people that are not chocolate people, but at some level, Do you know what I mean? I think you can be a chocolate person, even by dropping a square of chocolate, dark chocolate, into your curry or your chili. Do you know what I mean? To bring out flavors. There's something at some point that a little bit of chocolate can go a long way with our sense of well-being. And hey, in lockdown, for goodness sake, we all need as much, don't we? Love, whether, and from chocolate, I think, is the one of the easiest solutions. Now, tell me more about the Brighton Cacao Company.
I'm a pastry chef. So I spent a lot of time in London working as a pastry chef. And, you know, we just kind of went through all aspects of pastry, made bread, vanasserie, chocolate. And the chocolate was so difficult to get right. It's such an easy, simple product, but it's really, really tough to get right. And it just became quite a bit of a challenge to actually make a product and get it consistent as well. And I always wanted to have my own company. So I was just deciding what to do. And I really liked making cakes. And I just got into chocolate and I realized that it wasn't a huge market out there. And the more I was learning about chocolate, I was thinking, no one knows this. So the idea behind the company is that, you know, not only are we providing a great product, but we're also educating people. And we've got a kitchen set up so that we can do classes in here. And just want to kind of take everybody on the journey that I'm going on and everything that I'm learning, you know, and just putting that forward to everybody else.
Now, I'm going to unpack a few things there that you said, George. And the first one being, you're saying that there's not a lot of people doing it. Now, our shops are full of chocolate. So quite what do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's the number of companies making it. Because obviously, you know, the supermarket is absolutely jammed full of them. But we actually look at it, it really comes down to a couple of companies that are making that many chocolate bars. Mm. And what I mean is more the artisan chocolate is, you know, there's quite a small number of us. Where, you know, when you can compare us to chefs or pastry chefs, or, you know, the actual number of us is quite small. Mm. But again, people, you know, you can buy a Cadbury's bar, but no one actually knows how it's made. No one knows who's made it. That's my idea of my shop, is that it's a little bit more personal as well. Mm. You can actually see the people making it. You can see us in the kitchen. You know, we can tell you about the product. Everything's handmade as well.
Well, I think that's the lovely thing, isn't it? Is that rather than just opening a bar of chocolate and eating it, to actually get into the experience of the chocolate, you know, where did it come and how it was made and, you know, what sort of flavors are you looking for and how did that combination come about? So that educational process, you're really about the passion, and I'm sure that comes from being a chef as well too. And there's sort of a science to being a chef, isn't there, about producing something with mixing up those flavors. So you were a leading pastry chef and you decided to get into chocolate, to open your own business. And of course, you opened your own business, or the frontage, because I live around the corner from you. You're on Portland Road. And I saw it, you know, coming soon, and the windows all blocked out, and it was lockdown. So what a nightmare opening, you know, a retail business in lockdown. So what did you have to do?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I remember, you know, I had the idea of the shop, and, you know, everyone was kind of telling me it's not as easy opening a business as people think. And, you know, I was like, yeah, no, of course, I get that. And then, yeah, you know, we're getting ready and we're aiming to open in April last year. And then obviously, yeah, lockdown hit. And it was just crazy. It was a crazy, crazy time. And the problem we actually had was we hadn't officially been opened. And I was still working for another company on the side. And our biggest problem was that all the builders merchants shut down. So by the time we were coming out of lockdown, we still hadn't finished the shop. So we had a real issue, because not only were we delayed and we had missed Valentine's in Easter, but you know, we had nothing done, and we were still paying our rent, so we then had no budget. So that was, you know, it was a really tough time, and you know, it was hard to actually trying to understand and operate a business when, you know, you hadn't really even started it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's just a nightmare, you know, with a young, fresh business. You're full of enthusiasm and excitement. You are starting on a budget as well, too. I mean, it's just, you know, you couldn't foreplan that. Now, tell me, you know, you didn't stop, though. You sort of reinvented your business model. So tell us how you work.
Well, the reason behind actually not stopping the business was that we'd never actually started. You know, we'd done a few markets and things like that, and it came in April where, you know, I had to sort of have a sit down with myself and decide whether to shut. And I just thought, I could, you know, can't shut before we've even opened. And I think a lot of people had expected us to shut. You know, that the odds were stacked against us, so we're kind of just, you know, it was just one last fight we had to go. And, you know, last year was really about survival, and it was, you know, what can we offer people that's still exciting, but just keeps us, you know, our heads above the water. So we started to do milkshakes in the summer, and we're making these amazing chocolate milkshakes. And I was making all the ganaches for them, and we were doing sort of flavored ones. And we, you know, each one had a little piece of chocolate in it, or a truffle. So we started to do that. And then I think just by creating more, it sort of re-sparked it. And as the months went by that we still had the shop, you know, we just had to try and get the shop back on track. So that's when we were like, okay, right, let's, you know, it's a tough time, but no one said it was going to be easy. So let's get back on with what we were doing. So then we started to sort of regain the focus, and we're really able to sort of work on, you know, the chocolate bars. We had to keep it quite simple. We've got a lot of plans for the shop. Currently, it's only me in the shop. So, you know, just to keep it simple, keep the quality up, and, you know, just try and keep everything exciting, really.
Well, the chocolate bars are lovely. I love the packaging. I love the design. Who came up with the they're like paintings, really. So who did you go to for that?
A friend of mine called Izzy. She's an illustrator, and she's absolutely incredible. And partly behind the business was, you know, I want to keep everything as local as I can. That's what's been really nice about this last year, is everyone's kind of come together, you know, and it's, let's help out this person and let's help out this business. And so I started to focus more on that. And when you're working with local people as well, they're, you know, you just have a better relationship with them.
Well, it feels like a gift. I mean, of course, you're going to pay a little bit more than some other, you know, high street chocolate bars. But of course, the whole idea is you're buying local, you're buying homemade. And then this packaging. And what was lovely, I bought the orange and lime. The orange and lime chocolate bar, and I bought it from a retailer, from the Flower Pot Bakery, actually. And saw it in there, and we were doing a big feature on oranges on the last month's show. But when you opened it, and also the inside wrapper, everything is very environmentally friendly, which I liked, and sort of that rustling of the brown paper sort of inside wrapper. And the flavours, the lime came out very strong, but it was a very soft texture on the tongue, you know, and the orange was not overpowering. So tell us about, you know, sort of the sourcing of, if you like, your oils or your flavourings that go into the chocolate. What decisions have you made at Brighton Cocoa Company about that?
Well, so it actually comes down to the chocolate. I'll come up with a new idea. So I've got a Moroccan mint coming up that I'm working on at the moment. And what it is I'll do is I'll buy different chocolates from different origins of the world. So the orange and lime bar is the chocolates from Ghana. And what I'll do is I'll buy in the chocolate, and then I'll have a tasting, and we see how it tastes, see the texture, the feel, the smoothness. You know, is it creamy? What kind of flavor are we getting out of that chocolate? From there, you know, we make notes. And then from there, that's when we go, okay, this will pair quite nicely with this, or this will, you know, if it's slightly sweeter, if it's fruity, if it's spicy. And then we go from there, really. And With like the flavorings, you know, sometimes I'll use tea, sometimes I'll use different oils. I'm looking at dehydrating fruit as well, so we can put that into its sort of fresh fruit as well.
It makes so much sense whenever you say about where you're getting your chocolate bean from. Sort of looking at parts of the world and the flavors that brings out, it totally makes sense because that is going to change as soon as you mix it with another flavor that is complementary. So all of that testing, tasting, that sort of whole scientific approach, really. So you have to have good taste buds. Did you find that you really had to work hard at acquiring your sense of taste to be a chocolate taster, George?
Yeah, it was quite difficult at first. I remember we first did it when I was at a pastry school in London at a place called Le Cordon Bleu. And that's when I first, you know, I'd been a chef for a number of years before that, but this is where they really took the game up. You know, it was a real step up. This is where we did a lot of wine tasting, you know, and it was just, yeah, we did a lot of chocolate tasting as well. And it was so difficult to be, you know, when you have tried it and you go, oh, that's chocolate. And it's like, well, what are you tasting? And you're like, chocolate.
Yeah. You know?
So, and it was really difficult to actually reach part what you're actually tasting. And then, so what I actually did was I drew a wheel and I would put in different colors and different words. I'd put sweet, savory, smooth, spicy, and then I'd add in, you know, raspberry, juniper, cloves, vanilla, and I would just put all these different words, and as I would taste it, I would sort of close my eyes, open up, and I'd just look at the page and see what is actually coming out to me.
That's a great idea. I think we could all do that. And it adds another dimension to your tasting, because sometimes, you know, whenever, say, as you say, with wine tastings, whatever, or coffee tastings, and sometimes the power of suggestion is put to you. Can you taste, you know what I mean, the berries? Can you taste? Oh, yeah. But I love that, because actually, if you've put those circles down, you've got somewhere to start with texture, etc., and smell, and just what's it like in the tongue, bittersweet, and then see what else comes through. So that's wonderful. So it's really an education, and that's a very big part of who you are and what you're doing. Well, you're listening to The Food and Drink Show with myself, Karen Morton, and it is that time when we say a big hello to Paul Couchman, our co-presenter, the Regency cook. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Karen. And it was lovely to see you this morning on my doorstep.
Wasn't that a nice surprise? I mean, yes. You know, when you think about it, it's a year since we've seen each other face to face.
Oh, been that long.
I know. And of course, what could be nicer than to have me landing on your doorstep with a bag of chocolate?
I know. It's like a dream, honestly.
Wasn't that absolutely lovely thing to have? And you know, and of course, it is that time of year, isn't it, whenever we think about chocolate and Easter eggs and all of that. So today on the show, we are featuring the lovely Brighton Cocoa Company based in Portland Road in Hove.
I'm on my desk in front of me. I've got these little white packets with chocolate buttons, and there's some very beautiful, what's this called? Dark chocolate with lapsang tea and sea salt as well. That's all in front of me now, just all laid out, waiting for
Isn't
you to tell
it?
Me to start eating.
Yeah. Which one would you like to try first, Paul?
Right, okay. So I've got them all lined up here. You see, the rum one is enticing me up here. So that's on my in the top left corner of my selection here. Rum notes, it says here. Sweet
yes.
Coffee notes and rum notes. Ecuador, 70%.
And you know what? It is really, that also very much appealed to me, because being a coffee drinker, you know, I like anything. You know, chocolate and coffee is always gorgeous. So you've got your little packet and I've got mine.
Wow.
And we have these little droplets of
of
chocolate.
I've got to get my pair of scissors. Matt's just give me a pair of scissors.
I've got
sticky labels to get over. Right, I'm in.
So this is the Ecuador, the cocoa bean that's come from Ecuador, and it's 70% beautiful chocolate. So we have these little droplets, listeners, that we are just going to taste. And the nice thing is that we've got different intensity of flavors from chocolates from around the world. So the Ecuadorian one. So melt it in your mouth.
quite sweet, actually. Mm. Mm. So I've got this lovely... Can I just read you this lovely description? Because I had a quick look in the flavour for Sorbus. And Nikki Signet really describes how really good chocolate, how you have to let it, put it in your mouth and let it melt on the top of your mouth. Because with, when you get cheap chocolate, sweet chocolate, you get the taste immediately. But with these more complicated tastes, she says, it's like running your tongue along the main London to Edinburgh railway line. So it starts off, it's a slow progress, that's the thing. So that's what I've tasted with this one as well. Mm. You don't get the taste immediately, it comes later. It is lovely, isn't it?
It is.
Delayed gratification.
Well, and you know, that is lovely because you just keep getting the different layers. So I would say that that definitely it has, even though it's a dark chocolate, you know, 70%, there's a sweetness to it. I think it's smooth. Mm. And I'm definitely getting the coffee flavours coming through. So I could imagine that going into, I think what George does is, you know, with the Brighton Cacao Company sort of makes nice truffles and rum truffles with that. And you could see that. So
I can taste the rum as well. Mm. You know, you really can. The note of rum in there is incredible. It's almost like milk chocolate, isn't it? It's so sweet.
That, you know, and this delicious. Is where with the good chocolate is, isn't it, too? I've just noticed that as well, too, that that tasting a range of the chocolates, there is a smoothness no matter what, which I really, really like. Yep. Now, Paul, we're going to try the Araba chocolate, and it's 39%, and it is milkier. You can see that in the colour, you know, it is more of a milk chocolate. But yep. I have to say, I did delve in for a little... go, you know, earlier with this one, and I like it a lot. So pop it in your mouth and just see what you think.
Yeah, it's not lovely.
It's so smooth. Do you know what, it's creamy.
I'm trying to remember what it reminds me of. That's
well, it's sort of like a praline, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it has got a little bit of nuttiness, which is what George is wanting us to taste. But it is the smoothness and the creaminess that I particularly like. So I can see how George's, you know, the hazelnut praline sweets that he makes in his beautiful boxes would have this as the base. And you can tell why he would choose that, you know, because it's just so good.
It's taking me back to those selection boxes you used to get, you know, as kids. But it's got a much more sophisticated taste.
Yeah.
But it does taste a bit like Christmas chocolates you get when you're small.
It's
I think that's lovely.
It's fun. But, you know, it isn't sickly, is it? You know, again, it's just, it's lovely. But it's sweet and creamy, I would say, with that one.
Absolutely.
Now, the next one I'm going to ask you is the Madagascar. I mean, we've got to have a chocolate for Madagascar. It's very dark in colour. It's 67% proof. And... proof, but you know, 67% chocolate. Now, what we're wanting to do here, I think we're going to get, what is nice about this one is it's going to be completely different from the you know, sort of the smooth and creamy.
I feel I should have a glass of water to, like they do with wine tasting.
Yeah, in between.
So here we go. Just put that in my mouth now. Oh, this is interesting. It starts off. This one really develops later. That's interesting, isn't it?
It does.
I didn't taste anything in the beginning, and then it comes, which is lovely. Oh, so, the raspberry, I'm really getting.
It's got that sort of, you know, there's more of a bitter taste to this one, which is lovely. You can just, you know, enjoy it.
Yeah, I think there was raspberries in it if I didn't know any better.
Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible. Yeah, you think it's got the taste of, you know, a chocolate filled with raspberry liqueur or something.
So you can imagine having it with your cup of coffee. You wouldn't need much of this. It's so lovely. And his suggestion is to serve this with raspberries, whether they're fresh raspberries or something raspberry on the side. And then he would mix raspberries in with that as a chocolate bar. But I think how interesting that we're getting the raw chocolate. You can see then with the chocolatier, you know, with the sampling and the tasting of the chocolate.
Yeah.
Then getting the idea, you know, sort of on the tongue of what they're going to put with it. Now, we do have some of the chocolate bars which are have already got, you know, the flavourings added. And the one I know that you're very excited to try, like me, is the one with the Lapsang tea. And it's a, you know, a lovely dark chocolate. So see what you think about it.
Well, I'm going to be completely honest in that I have already tried this one, because when it came, such beautiful packaging as well, I thought I have to try this. And you know what? I'm just going to make another confession, is that for a long time, I've really not liked Lapsang Xushan tea. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think maybe 15 years I've not had any.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might... This is delicious. So I think I might go back to Lapsang Xushan tea now.
Well, there you go.
Don't you think tastes change and develop as you get older? Maybe want something that you didn't used to like. And so I think this has been a bit of a revelation for me, you know, in terms of the tea.
It's so, I think as we get older as well too, we like something that's interesting. And I think this is a really interesting chocolate. And you just want to savour it slowly. Now, one of the things that George said is that it was very good with whiskey. And because we're often thinking, what will we pair with chocolate? You know, what kind of wines? And so for the chocolate tasting that I'm going to have around my table as a family later on, I have got a Sauvignon Blanc. And then I've got something, you know, sort of a lot heavier, which is an Argentinian Malbec that was recommended. But I'm going to now just take a sip of whiskey, so that I can recreate the experience that George had. And they say it's always good, have your little sup of your whiskey or your wine and then take a bite of your chocolate, which I'm doing. Mm. Oh, Paul, that is very good, because you got the warmth of the whiskey and then the smokiness coming through. And of course, you're not looking for a smoky whiskey. Mm. That's a good recommendation. So to have that after your meal, you know, how delicious, a little bit of chocolate, little slug of whiskey. Hey, how divine. That is a good bar of chocolate, isn't it?
I love this whole idea of having a sort of chocolate tasting with people that you enjoy being with as well, that you can taste all these different flavours and ask people what they're tasting. Because it's like a very, you know, if people don't drink, it's a lovely way of having a sort of wine tasting session without the wine.
Mm. Isn't it? It's lovely. And
therefore, never thought of chocolate like this.
Mm, it's lovely. And of course, the thing is that you are supporting a local producer as well, too. And that's divine. It's this time of year that it's Easter when we think about chocolate. You know, we've had Christmas, we've had Valentine's, and now it is Easter. And I just wondered about your plans for this time of year when we're celebrating rebirth and all we're starting to come out of lockdown as well. So what could be better than taking on this sort of theological way of expressing new birth, you know, and newness around the egg?
And they're going to be from the different origins of the world. So I'm sure there'll be one from Ghana, because Ghana makes some of the best chocolate. We're going to have a caramelized white chocolate Easter egg as well. That's a huge favorite. And then we'll have some truffles and, you know, some dark chocolate Easter eggs as well. And just to keep it simple but interesting, between sort of 10 and £25, depending on the size of the eggs. Mm-hmm. It's affordable luxury. It is really what I'm aiming for, you know. So it is, yeah. You know, it is a luxury. It is a treat, but it's not so far out of everybody's price range. The thing I love about our chocolate is, you know, you can actually have a plain milk chocolate and you'll be surprised how much flavour.
And I have had your chocolate. So the beautiful gift box, you know, the black boxes with the mix of chocolates, some with a truffle base. And they look so pretty in their shapes, all handmade by you lovingly. Delicious. And I have to say that my Valentine's, being my partner and also my dad, they just thought they were delicious. They really did enjoy them, because I said, now make sure you savour each one, because these have been handmade by George, and I want you to say, can you taste that difference? So, I mean, they thoroughly enjoy them. So you do more than Easter eggs. So tell us, what is, I'd love to know, you know, what are your immediate plans, George, that the public, you know, our listeners can get involved with, and how can we reach you?
So that's what's been really interesting this year is, you know, last year was about survival, and, you know, it obviously 2020 flipped everyone upside down. And this year it's been really nice actually having the lockdown to start with, because being really able to focus on the sort of core values and what it is we're actually going to be doing as a business. So it's really everything creative that we can do with chocolate, you know. So as you said, obviously you had the box of the individual chocolates, then to the Easter eggs, we'll obviously have our bars. Working on a hot chocolate range as well. So we've got that coming out. And then during the summer, we'll be doing our milkshakes as well. And what we are looking for, I'm hoping with COVID restrictions, I'm hoping we'll be able to, but we'll be having chocolate classes as well at the shop. So that's something that's really exciting. And that's really fun to get involved in, because you can come in, you can create your own bar, you know, we can make our own chocolates, and we you know, drink Prosecco, and you finish the day off with a chocolate cocktail as well.
And you know that, hey, listen, put me down for that when that starts. That's just my idea of heaven, you know, making it and drinking it and just being able to socialize with other people. I think that is wonderful. A couple of years ago, I went on a chocolate making workshop. So enjoyed it. It was wonderful. And I'm game on for another one. And listeners, if you haven't been to a chocolate making workshop, I tell you, there's so much fun.
The main thing is safety, really. So for us, it's whenever it's safe for people to come in, and we just won't do it until it is. But I'm really hoping that by summer we'd be able to, because it is such a fun thing to do, and I feel like everyone needs it, don't they?
Oh, we all need. You know, that's the one thing I have to say, that I'm very grateful for all my blessings, you know, that health, safety, all of that. But the whole thing about fun, do you know what I mean? And spontaneity and having things booked in to look forward to. I think that's what we're all so looking forward to. And in the meantime, we can buy chocolate and we can enjoy the idea of gifting chocolate and the whole idea about, you know, that, as you said, affordable luxury. So George, from the Brighton Cocoa Company, how can we get your chocolates?
So we have an online website, and there's a link on our Instagram page, but you can also just type it into Google, which is brightoncacaocompany.com. And you can actually buy it. We have several customers, like wholesale customers as well, so you can buy it in flower pot stores, the coffee shop. There is Health Rebels on Western Road. They're a great shop as well. They sell it. Ginger and Dobbs in Shoreham, Bolney Wine Estate. They sell it. And there's a company called Spring Gardens, which is just off the Washington Roundabout in West Sussex. Yeah, and they sell it as well. So, but if there isn't a store nearby, then obviously, you know, we do have the website of which we can send it or deliver it.
Oh, that's great. Well, listen, it's such a joy to talk with you, George, and to learn of your plans as well, too, and all that you're doing with chocolate. It's been so enjoyable, and it's going to be even more enjoyable whenever I can actually eat some more of your chocolate.
I know, it's stopped me eating it.
So thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure to have you on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb.
I've still got loads left, so I'm going to we'll be diving into this this evening with Matt now. So yes, he'll be very happy. We both love chocolate.
Yeah, and it is. It's just a feel good factor, and as George himself says, that you know, chocolate is an affordable luxury when you buy nice chocolate. So that couldn't be better. So absolutely gorgeous. So we have chocolate, and of course. Chocolate eggs you can also get from the Brighton Cocoa Company. And I just love this time of year when our shops are full of just, you know, the way chocolates are served in beautiful containers as well, and the packaging and the boxes. I could just walk around and look at them, you know what I mean? But you have to go to a nice deli, or you have to go to a farm shop or something at the moment to kind of get that full experience, you know, of chocolate in all its decadence. Just thinking about the timing as well, Paul, you know, 10 years on with the census, which, of course, everybody is filling in like mad. And I was just wondering, you know, when they're thinking about it, you know, what was happening 10 years ago in our lives and how things have moved on in relation to food. And when we think about food 11 years ago, because we you know, we forget these things. But 11 years ago, you know, the French macaroons, that they were just starting to become en vogue and in fashion, you know, replacing the cupcake. And we still have them, don't we? Filling windows in all their glorious colours. But that was when they were really coming into fashion. And pies is the other thing, but handheld pies. And that's something that you're very keen on in producing, with us coming out of lockdown, being able to sit outside and meet people coming into April and May. So what kind of pies have you been experimenting with, Paul?
So I've been doing raised pies, and that's made with... Have you heard of hot watercress pastry? That's basically pastry. So it's the pastry that pork pies are made of. And it's actually the oldest form of pastry. So that goes right back to that medieval period. And if you think back to that period, you think of pastry. This is often said that pastry wasn't actually eaten. It was a way of cooking the meat. So to protect the meat from the fierceness of the oven, they would cover it in this pastry. The pastry would be burnt, and then you could eat the filling. But that has been disputed. People say, well, it seems silly to go to all that effort to make pastry and not eat it. So,
oh, my gosh, to me, it's the best part of the pie. Indeed. Oh,
well, don't you think so? Yeah.
Why have a pie and not eat the pastry?
Exactly. So this historic thing has been challenged. And they say, well, probably people were actually eating the pastry. And pastry goes right back to the Romans and the Egyptians. And the pastry they made would have been something like phyllo pastry. So it was made with oil and lots of those very thin layers. So pastry has a very long history. The handmade pies are really coming back now. And especially, you know, those old pork pies. Because I think that went out a bit, didn't it? But it's come back now with a vengeance. So my favourite, obviously, is the pork pie. But I really like putting game and stuff in there with prunes and bits of fruit in there as well. And I do a lovely chicken pie as well, which is also delicious with a white sauce. And what I'll be doing in 6 weeks' time, an online pie workshop. So we can all make pies together online. So that's going to be quite exciting.
Oh, that's delightful. Now, with the courses that you're running and with the pies, what kind of pies will you be making?
I'll be concentrating on the meat pies, but I've also got a very beautiful 18th century artichoke pie, and that includes mace as well. And also we put bits of egg in it. They use lots of egg yolk as well in the pie. Ingredient, which is maybe a bit strange, is lemon zest as well.
Oh gosh.
So you've got anchovy, lemon zest, you've got egg and some mace as well. And it's a delicious combination.
Yeah, that's a lot of flavors. That's amazing. If anybody is interested in joining one of your online workshops, and, you know, I have attended the one before Christmas, and it's lovely. You get people from all over the world, which I just love, seeing into people's kitchens and houses, and they're filling up the screen. And the way that you are with everyone, say, show me what you're doing there. Oh, lovely. And you comment, and it's delightful. Everybody feels really wonderful. So I can just imagine that the pie one is going to be very successful. What dates have you got for those, Paul?
So I haven't put any official dates. It's going to be in 6 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. But the best way to get any information is to go straight to my website. So www.paulcouchman.co.uk. Once I've got the dates, I'll put them up there. And also you can sign up to my email list.
Also, looking back to when the census was done 10 years previous, flavoured sausages, you know, as in the diversity of flavours of sausages were really coming in. That was on trend. And we see a multitude of flavours now, Paul. I mean, what sort of flavours have you noticed yourself when you've been out at your, you know, sort of ordering from your butcher?
The one I really liked was apricot, actually. So this sounds very strange, doesn't it? But it had bits of apricot in it. We get a special sage, I think it's just sage and onion one as well, quite simple actually. But I remember some one with blue cheese as well that I tasted, which I thought was quite good. Unusual, doesn't it? But that was really good. The spicy ones as well, you know, the chili ones. What about you?
Herbs and season, I think. Herbs and season. And I do like rosemary and thyme and things like that going on. But it's just that pork is so lovely, isn't it? Pork and apple. Getting sweeter notes coming in there, which is nice. But the key is really, isn't it, is getting a good quality sausage, you know. And also, you know, even vegetarian sausages now have come a long way for, since 10 years ago, which can be very enjoyable. Now, the other thing that was becoming en vogue over 10 years ago from the last census, meatless Mondays. So as having days where we're encouraged to have less meat. You know, so tofu Thursdays, and they were all themed. But the meatless Mondays, we can smile about. And also, it was really the start of the nut milks, you know, particularly almond milk being launched. And now, you know, everybody just, it's second nature, isn't it, in the fridge that you'll see the nut milks. And when you stand in a queue for your takeaway coffee, there's a great many coffees going out now with all sorts of unusual milks and non-dairy options, isn't there? And also the sweet potatoes as an all year round vegetable because of the goodness in them. But actually it's a vegetable to have as a substitute for potatoes. So there you go. They were some of the things that were really coming out 10 years ago. What do you think, if food was added to the census this year, of right now, what sort of things do you think would be coming out there, Paul?
Oh, that's a really good question. You've stumped me a bit. Let me just think. Well, you were talking about the nut milks, weren't you? But of course, now it's the oat milks that have taken over. Mm. More people are eating oat milks than there are nut milks. So that's changing.
Yeah.
I know that. What else is in?
Kombuchas and...
Oh, fermented. Yeah, that's the big trend, isn't it? Absolutely. Fermented food is really big.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've forgotten all about that. Because people weren't eating that. And when I was in Holland, I mean, that was just normal. Holland and Germany, you eat sauerkraut. You know, that is part of the diet. But we weren't eating that at all, were we? Until quite recently. And now it's suddenly a health food. Well, of course, it's been going on for, you know, it's a way of preserving your cabbage. So it's been going on, you know, for centuries and centuries as a you know, as a necessity.
Yeah.
And now it's seen as a sort of health luxury, isn't it?
It
you
is.
Know, that you've got to take. So it's very odd. Yeah, it's completely.
And there's a lot of. And lots of producers either producing it in very fancy bottles and books in the bookshelves for how to make your own. And sauerkraut as well, too, very much coming back in vogue. But, you know, it is funny when you stop to think, what are we eating now that we didn't eat so much beforehand? What are the trends? I think certainly the, you know, the bakery element, you know, going, what we shall we say, the sort of more upmarket feel, isn't it? You know, that we've made it more sophisticated with the breads that are on offer and the cakes and the whole experience around the coffee shop. We've probably got more varieties of coffee as well, too.
Of course. Yeah, I was going back to the bakery, though. Sourdough, we weren't eating that 10 years ago, were we?
No.
Not in the quantities we are now. So
definitely not.
The thing is, you forget it because it's so ubiquitous.
Yes.
I remember, I mean, this is really going back, but 20 years ago, I remember not being able to get good bread in Britain because I used to travel to Europe a lot and the bread there is incredible. And coming back to Britain and realizing that you couldn't buy a nice, crispy, fresh, you know, properly made loaf of bread until quite, you know, relatively recently. I mean, now it's ubiquitous. You can find it everywhere, you know. But yeah, that's taken its time, hasn't it? So that's interesting. Yeah.
And I would say that is the big thing, you know, with the queues outside the bakery. And it definitely has got a lot more sophisticated.
Yeah. And the coffee.
Definitely the coffees. Definitely the coffees. So I'd say that would be a big thing. So you're listening to the Food and Drink Show with myself, Karen Morton and Paul Couchman on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. So what else has been sort of in it coming into your kitchen that has been delighting you at the moment, Paul?
Okay, so I've got this wonderful book, which I don't cook much from. It's called Bitter Honey, and it's from Letitia Clark, and it's about the island of Sardinia. And in this book, and I've shared this a lot on my Instagram, I think you've seen the photo, there is a recipe for blood orange ricotta polenta and olive oil cake.
Oh, the look of that. And I could just dive into that photograph, Paul.
Yes. So what you, to visualise it, what you've got is a cake which you make it upside down. Well, all cakes you make upside down, but at the bottom of the cake, I've got blood oranges. So I had the last blood oranges. Slice them really, really thinly. And then you make a sort of caramel. You pour that into your cake tin and then you put these slices of blood orange over that. So that's what you'll see when the cake is turned up. And on top of that goes a cake mixture. And in the cake mixture, there's olive oil, there's sugar, there's salt, there's ricotta, there's the orange juice, the juice of four small blood oranges. You've got some lemon zest in there, some eggs, some polenta, flour and some baking powder. So you make a batter out of that and you pour that over the top. Put that in the oven for about an hour, 40 to 50 minutes. What you get is a lovely moist cake, and it's got these beautiful blood oranges on top. And you can imagine the orange and the red, you know, streaks that go through these oranges. And you slice into that, and you have a very squidgy, soft, yellow cake that's ever so slightly sweet and just melts in your mouth. And it's a sort of breakfast cake. You could eat it in the morning. We've both done with a coffee.
Oh, delightful. And a nice little bit of yogurt on the side, I think.
That would go perfect. Cause it's, and also, the sun was shining and I had my slice of ricotta cake with my coffee and I was just imagining myself in Sardinia. It was lovely.
Divine. Oh, that just sounds great. And you see, that's the other thing that food sparks off in it as well, isn't it? About memories, happy memories, you know, of our holidays and, you know, sitting round the table with people. And of course, we are still reminiscing, aren't we? Because we're not allowed all be together. But it's on its way. It's on its way. Now, thinking about Easter time and the time of year, I mean, we've hot cross buns all year round, but we know that we make something special of them, you know, around the Easter time. And you're running your workshops. You've been perfecting hot cross buns. Now, judging by all your photographs, I mean, by just in getting the recipe and the photographs and everything right to share in your workshops, how many have you actually made before it's even started, Paul?
Batches and batches. Honestly, I've been completely obsessed because what I've been doing is adding more spice, taking spice out. I've been trying to get them softer and fluffier. So it's just, and it's really at the top end now because I've been doing the course, I think it's 2 years now. So I know how to make them, but it's that extra level. And I know if I tweak the recipe a tiny bit, I can get them slightly more fluffier, slightly spicier. You know, so this is it. This is perfection stage, which I adore. And we've been eating rather a lot of them, unfortunately. You know?
But, you know, there's something very comforting and lovely. You know, you've got a scone on one side and a hot cross bun on the other. And I think, honestly, just divine. Maybe you might put a croissant in the middle. Those three. But for me, just the three most satisfying sort of savoury things in the world. And you've got that, you know, because of the currants or something in the hot cross bun and the spices coming out, which is just divine. Now, of course, what you had to do really with making so many, not only just about texture, but because you're working online instead of face to face, the photographs had to play a very big part in everything that you're doing. So you know, what have you learned about food photography through trial and error, Paul?
Luckily, there is YouTube these days, and there are some amazing people teaching you how to do it. And it really, I mean, luckily I went to photography school, but even then, you really got to think about composition and lighting and what background you're using and all these things, and about how you have to rearrange things just ever so slightly to get the picture better, really up your game. So not only have you got to be able to be good at giving a course, but you've got to be good at making photos for the course as well.
Have you still got places on the courses that are going to be in the lead up to Easter weekend?
Go straight to my website. That's www.paulcouchman.co.uk. There's a big blue button on the front page. It says go to my courses. Click on that and it will click you right through to Eventbrite, where you can buy the tickets and come along. And I've got it on Thursday. So the Thursday is at 4 o'clock. So I've done that for the American and Canadian audience. Mm-hmm. So it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And on Friday, on Good Friday, it's at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Lovely. And what a lovely thing to be able to do. And it's just
such fun.
It's a sense of occasion and you're with other people. So it is an experience, and then you get something delightful to eat at the end of it, which is just great. And while you were talking there, Paul, I decided, you know, I wanted to carry on with the chocolate tasting. I'll have no room for dinner. But I went for the Brighton Cacao Company, their chocolate bar, the chili and lime. Well, honestly, boy, oh boy.
I'm scrubbing it now.
Talk about chili and that. My goodness. It certainly is. You feel it on your lips. And the, so you're it's an explosion in the mouth. And again, there's a sort of a bitterness to the chocolate, which is lovely. I like that, to go along with the chili, which I think is perfect. And I suppose there's for me, that little bit of freshness that goes in with it from the lime, but it's definitely the chili that you're getting that's coming out there, really spicy.
You get the lime first. Sorry, I'm talking about mouthful now.
Yeah. Well, I think your taste buds are more refined than mine, but...
I don't know. I taste the lime first, and the chili comes a lot later, doesn't it? It's very interesting.
It's delicious. I mean, I'm just my whole mouth. I mean, you know, you're definitely getting chili in there. That is for sure. It's absolutely delicious. But I love that you know, within the range that you're kind of getting these variety of flavors. And we talked about sausages earlier, and with chocolate, you know, what you can put into chocolate that completely changes the eating experience, doesn't it? You know, which is so lovely. So, if you have you sort of a favourite at the moment, Paul? If you were to go for, you know, sort of the smoky tea flavour with the lapsang, sangshong that I cannot pronounce, or are you going for a chili and lime, or are you going for something sort of maybe a little bit sweeter, which is the which again is delightful, and I'm very fond of peppercorn and Himalayan salt. So. Pink peppercorn. So what a lovely combination, sort of all those pinky flavors that are going on in there. So again, you know, a dark chocolate, which is lovely. And let's just see here. I'm just going to taste that. We may as well, you know what I mean, while we have the chocolate here. Oh, yeah, lovely. But I'm going to see what's making. Oh, wow.
Can you smell it? I can smell the pink peppercorns when you just smell it.
Oh my gosh, that burst of pink peppercorn in your mouth. It's wow. And then that saltiness at the back of your tongue, it's lovely. It reminding me of Dutch licorice, actually, the saltiness that's coming out there from the Himalayan salt. But wow, what a combination. The pink peppercorn is amazing.
That is amazing.
Oh, I'm definitely going to buy more of that. That is so good.
Maybe that's my favourite. Answering the question now. Maybe this is my favourite.
Oh, I have to say now that we maybe saved the best to last, but we're not going to say no to any of them, are we?
No, I really love that one.
It's very good, and that is the Seo Tomi chocolate base. So it's sort of 60% rather than 70%, but it's still, you know, sort of a dark chocolate. And it's that mixture, isn't it? It's sort of smooth as well. It's a very interesting taste. Clever George, absolutely. That's a very interesting taste. Well, more of those are going to be bought, and you can order from them online, or just pop down and see George, and you get a lovely big smile with it as well. And he delivers locally, By hand, which is a very nice thing. So we've had pies, we've had chocolate, and talking about lovely online workshops that you're running. Well, listen, Paul, lovely as always for us to have this little banter about all things food. And I hope that you're going to enjoy further munching on the chocolate. Best of luck with all your hot cross bun workshops and, of course, the pie workshops. And don't forget, listeners, that you can find us here at the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. You can go to www.radioreverb.com. You can see the Food and Drink Show on the schedule because it does go out on repeats. For any time you miss a show and you miss a recipe or something, you think, want to listen, it goes out regularly. You can get us on podcast and on social media at Tasty Radio Brighton, both on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for listening to us today, and we look forward to joining you next time in the kitchen with your pen and paper and sharing some recipes, some food and drink from local Sussex producers, and whatever else Paul and I come across that tickles our fancy. Ta-da!